Welcome to the Thursday edition of Locked On Oilers, part of the Locked On podcast. I'm your host, Hernan Salas from TSN 1260, the Oilers post-game show, along with two guys and a goalie, the podcast. Obviously, today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. I'm excited for today's pod as I'll be joined by the senior writer at the Hockey News, Matt Larkin. Lots to get to, as on Wednesday we had a trade between the Montreal Canadiens and St. Louis Blues heading to Montreal. Goaltender Jake Allen in a 2022 seventh round pick, with Blues getting a third and a seventh in this year's draft. Obviously, the first question that was asked was, why are the Canadiens getting another goalie with a hit of $4.35 million? Allen ended up playing in this year's playoffs as he took over for the struggling Jordan Binnington for a couple of games. Of course, Allen has been a starter and was the backup on the Blues Stanley Cup run. We'll get into this with Matt, as the Habs now have a very pricey goalie duo, as Price is making $10.5 million, and at least in my opinion, he ain't going nowhere. Will Allen give Price more nights off during the regular season? I think so. Will it benefit Price if they can get into the playoffs? Yes, but that's a big what if. And it's almost ridiculous to think that Price can be traded. Outside of the money, why would you want to trade one of the best goalies in the league? But let's put things in perspective, as Allen only has 1 year left on his deal, and with next season's start date and the length still up in the air, from what we've seen in these bubble playoffs, you see why Montreal went out and got a very good goalie to partner up with Carey Price. I know. It makes sense 1 minute, and the next you're going through all these different scenarios questioning the move. But Matt Larkin will give us some insight into this trade that happened on Wednesday between the Montreal Canadiens and the St. Louis Blues. We'll also get into the NHL playoffs, Colorado forcing a Game 7. Will we see two more Game 7s as the Flyers look to tie the series at 3, as do the Vancouver Canucks? Both games should be excellent. Matthew Barzal, Sean Couturier, game time decisions for tonight, so make sure you keep tabs on that. If you're in fantasy hockey leagues, we'll also talk Justin Schultz, Taylor Hall, and Matt Murray. Man, oh man, how the rumors heated up on Matt Murray to Toronto with Edmonton. There's a deal on the table, according to some reports out there, that Jim Rutherford's just sitting on for now. And of course, we have to ask Matt Larkin some Petroletto's questions, as it's going to be an intriguing offseason for the Edmonton Oilers. Not a lot of money to spend, but a lot of holes to fill still. You can hit me up and give us a follow on Twitter at HernanTheMan, at Locked On Oilers, and at Locked On Pods. And don't forget to download and subscribe on your favorite app for the latest episode. All right, let's get to it, as I'm pleased to be joined by Matt Larkin, senior writer at the Hockey News. You can find him on Twitter at THN Matt Larkin. Matt, thank you for taking some time out of your day to join me here on the Locked On Oilers podcast. Let's get right to it. Yesterday, we saw Jake Allen, you know, being sent to Montreal from St. Louis. How surprised were you when you saw this deal on Wednesday, Matt?
I was a little bit surprised. Okay, I was surprised from Montreal's perspective a bit. St. Louis is absolutely not remotely surprised, because it was a foregone conclusion they were going to trade Jake Allen, $4.35 million cap hit, 1 year left on his deal. They can't keep him and Jordan Binnington if they wanted any chance to re-sign Alex Pietrangelo. So no surprise to see Allen move. He was probably the most likely player in the league to get traded this offseason. Montreal getting him, a bit of a surprise, more from a money perspective. I do think it's a great idea that they're getting a seasoned backup. Carey Price leading the league in minutes played the last 2 years. He's playing way too much, had a great playoffs, but was actually pretty subpar in the regular season. So it's going to help a lot to take some heat off him, maybe get Carey Price to play 50 or 55 games a year instead of playing, you know, 65 range. It's kind of like what the Bruins have done with Tuukka Rask. So I understand the hockey fit for the trade. In terms of the money, you know, now you're spending $15 million in cap space on goaltending. It seems a bit extreme, but maybe these playoffs kind of scared the Habs, seeing how many teams were going deep into their well for goaltending. It's possible we're going to have a condensed schedule again next year during the regular season too. So I think they're overpaying and they know it, but it's okay. And this way they can also keep their top prospect, Caden Primo, in the AHL, where he can play, you know, 50 games as a starter, as opposed to being a backup to Price and, you know, playing 20 games or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm sure the critics, there's a lot of critics of this move, especially in a hotbed like Montreal. And like you said, there's a lot of money tied up on two goalies, but he's only on the books for one more year. And from what we've seen in these playoffs, Matt, and we really don't know what's going to happen next season and how many games, and you're kind of seeing in these bubble playoffs that you need two goalies, don't you?
You really do. And I think the position has changed so much. And not only, you know, are the goalies playing a lot more because you have these 3 games and 4 nights in the bubble, but just in general, before COVID even hit, this is something I've been writing about, you know, even as recently as a year ago, the 2018-19 season set a record for the most goalies ever who've played 30 or more games. So the starts are being distributed more. More teams are doing the 1A, 1B system. And it's partially because the position has changed. And because, you know, we've seen crackdowns on obstruction, and after the 04-05 lockout, last couple of years, crackdown on slashing, players have more room to move on the ice. They move laterally more. There's more east-west. There are far more shots on goal. We have the league setting records, or, you know, 40-year highs almost in shots on goal. So goaltenders are just busier over the course of a game. They move left to right more. They get up and down more into their butterfly. And the position just is much harder on the body than it ever has been before. So it's much harder for goalies to play 70-plus games, and that's why it's becoming very infrequent. And it's extremely important for teams to have the 1A, 1B.
Matt Larkin from the Hockey News joining me here on Locked On Oilers. Matt, the Canadians are set in goal, as they'll probably have the highest paid duo heading into next season. So what's next for Bergevin? Is it as simple as Max Domi?
I think Bergevin is going to be one of the most interesting GMs to watch this offseason, because the Habs, you know, suddenly it's hard. It's like the fact that they beat Pittsburgh is going to put a seed in Bergevin's head that this team can be competitive sooner than expected. And could that actually be a dangerous thing, considering the Habs in the regular season, they're 10 points out of a playoff spot. They're 24th overall in the NHL standings, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they were a dominant team. But also, you know, the Habs, they've traded away two of the draft picks, but they still have 12, I believe. Or I think they got one coming back, so maybe it's 13. But they have tons of draft picks. They already have a really good farm system, one of the best in the league, some really exciting prospects coming up. We're going to see Alexander Romanov on defense next year, maybe Cole Caulfield next year or the year after. Really promising sniper. Primo, like I said. So the Habs have a really nice wave of young kids coming, but also Bergevin's a pretty aggressive GM. Even a year ago when they were further behind the rebuild, he still felt the need to go after Sebastian Aho with that offer sheet. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Habs are aggressive, and I think they kind of have the mentality that they want to take some chances while Carey Price still has good years left and while Shea Weber still have good years left as well. So I don't think they're going to go all in, because, again, they have a really exciting youth movement, but I wouldn't be that surprised to see them pursue one more big name. And I think someone to watch is maybe Patrick Laine. I don't know whether it'd be in a direct trade, but it's interesting because there's a link between the Domi family in Winnipeg, and the Winnipeg Jets really need a number two center, and that can be a role that Domi can fill. So could you see a trade between those two teams kind of built around Laine and Domi? I could sort of see a fit there. Definitely not one for one. I think that Winnipeg would have to, or Montreal rather, would have to pay more getting Laine coming their way. But it's something I wouldn't be that surprised to see happen. I think Bergevin believes his team can be competitive pretty soon.
More with Matt Larkin from the Hockey News as we'll get into the NHL playoffs and defenseman Justin Schultz, forward Taylor Hall, and goaltender Matt Murray. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. You're listening to Locked On Oilers with Hernan Salas as we continue our chat with senior writer at the Hockey News, Matt Larkin. We will get into the Oilers in the third segment, but first, Matt, you know, Pens GM Jim Rutherford made it clear that he's not bringing back defenseman Justin Schultz. It's funny because here in Edmonton, we polled it yesterday saying, would you take Schultz back here in Edmonton as a 5-6 defenseman? And, you know, the poll was a lot closer than I thought it would, but in the end, it was just over 50% for no. Schultz is 30 years old, coming off making 5.5. What does a contract look like for Schultz? And, I mean, he can still be a valuable piece for many teams.
I think especially because it's a flat cap year, if I'm Justin Schultz, I think you're searching for a shorter term deal, kind of a chance to prove it, maybe a 1 or 2 year deal. And if you're Justin Schultz, I think the dream scenario is you land on a team that has the opportunity for you to get power play time, puff up your numbers, and then maybe you parlay that into a better contract next time around. But unfortunately, you know, his value has really depreciated. As recently as 2016-17, the second cup run with Pittsburgh, he was a really important piece on that team. I think he finished like 10th in Norris Trophy voting, somewhere around there, because Chris Letang was out. So he showed what he can do. And, you know, we've seen, especially when he was first coming up as a prospect with the Oilers, he's got still really good puck-moving skill. Some people are saying, you know, does Edmonton need more puck movement on their back end? I'm not really one of those people that thinks that's the number one team need, because you do have guys like Evan Bouchard and Philip Broberg coming up the pike. And, you know, if you're bringing in Justin Schultz to help your power play, well, it's the same logic of bringing in Mike Green, even though he didn't really get a chance. But the Oilers have the best power play in the last, I believe, 41 years. So I don't think you need much help on the power play. They had the highest percentage since the 79 New York Islanders. So I don't know what Justin Schultz is bringing to the table, because, like you said, he's not going to be a top four defenseman. So I don't know if it's a perfect fit in Edmonton, but I don't think it would cost a lot to bring him in. So it's a pretty low risk acquisition, especially because you wouldn't have to sign him, I don't think, for long term.
Another former Oiler has an interesting decision this offseason. It's been reported that there's been good discussion with the Coyotes brass and Hall's agent. I mean, there's no harm in listening, Matt, but I can't see Hall signing in Arizona. Do you share my sentiment?
I'm 50-50. I know he's expressed interest, but I also think that Taylor Hall is a guy who he's had to be part of so many losing teams in his career so far. And, you know, he's made a joke about it at the lottery. He's the lottery magnet, all that kind of stuff. But as he progresses in his career, I think he's ready to play on some contending teams and maybe be more of a complimentary piece joining some great players. So I kind of see a link between Taylor Hall. I feel like he's following a similar career trajectory to Marian Hossa 10, 12 years ago. So Hossa came up with the Senators, got a taste of success, and then he was also on the Atlanta Thrashers, some really bad teams. Then he goes, gets traded to Pittsburgh, and then he, in midseason, like Hall was traded, and then you have Hossa, he takes 1 year to take a shot with a really good team that had just won the Stanley Cup. So I wonder if Taylor Hall, especially in this climate, decides to sign a one-year deal and do what Hossa did in 2008. And do you go to a team with a lot of cap space and that's a cup contender like Colorado, which could afford Taylor Hall for 1 year? I could see him doing something like that. Then again, you could have a pseudo-contender, mid-tier contender, offer him a full long-term deal, and maybe you take it as well, because if you can get that security in this financial climate, it's a good thing. But either way, I think he's going to be the marquee forward on the market this summer. The question is, or I shouldn't say summer, I should say off season. I still keep calling it summer.
yeah, no doubt.
Winter, I guess, or fall. Yeah. But especially, you know, he won't come cheap. I'm not saying it's going to be Artemi Panarin money, but this is still someone who has a Hart Trophy. So when you're doing contract talks, that's going to be used as something admissible. The fact he's won an MVP award, and it's pretty unprecedented for a Hart Trophy winner, still in his 20s, to be on the open market.
In conversation with Matt Larkin from the Hockey News, Matt, you know, TSN's Darren Dreg reported yesterday the Maple Leafs are eyeing Matt Murray. In the third segment, we'll get into Matt Murray and the Oilers, but I just want to get to this report because, I mean, they haven't had success in the playoffs, but I wouldn't put it at the feet of Freddie Anderson in Toronto. He's got 1 year left. Is this even a possibility? Like, you'd have to move Freddie Anderson. There's probably a lot of takers for him as well because he's a very good goaltender. But what do you make of this report of the Leafs eyeing Matt Murray? And also because it was also being reported that Rutherford does have a deal on the table that he's, you know, he's just, you know, sitting on it for now. What do you make of all this Matt Murray Leafs talk?
I think there's some validity to it because it's already been reported earlier this week that the Leafs are listening to offers on Freddie Anderson. And I agree. I for the most part, have been an Anderson defender. I don't think he's been the reason the Leafs have lost in recent years. At the same time, he hasn't been one to carry the team and steal games either. You know, if you look at what happened with the Leafs and Jonas Korpisalo, Anderson never had a Korpisalo game in any of the playoff runs so far with the Leafs. He hasn't gotten to that next level. He's a good but maybe not great goaltender. But the thing is with Matt Murray, it's like, okay, well, you can get him now because he's coming off a bad year. You can get him at a discount. But what he's shown in the last year especially, he has not been a model of consistency either. So it's not guaranteed that you're getting an upgrade when you're bringing in Matt Murray. Then again, he's younger. The potential is still very high. He's still in his mid-20s, which in goalie years is still considered pretty young. And if you look at the teams he won with, the Stanley Cup with Pittsburgh, those were teams that were very offensively oriented. They didn't have star-studded defense. They used a lot of speed. And they didn't always defend the net particularly well. And Murray was able to succeed in that system. So there are similarities, I think, with the system the Leafs have been playing. So I don't think it's necessarily a terrible bet if you can get Murray in at a decent price. That's what it comes down to.
Matt, let's head on over to the NHL playoffs. Last night we saw Michael Hutchinson win his second in a row and, you know, a weak goal to kick that game off by the Dallas Stars there. And then Colorado didn't fold and came back with four goals to tie the series at 3. I'll be honest, I thought at 3-1 it was over, but Colorado's shown that they got some fight in them. And heading into Game 7, what do you expect? I mean, obviously you're going to get a better effort from Dallas, but Colorado's really firing in these last two games. And Michael Hutchinson, it's a nice little story here.
It is. And you know, I've been the believer overall in the Avs, even when they were down 3-1. We talked about it on our own podcast, whether we think they could do it. And they were a team that I wasn't going to count out because if you look at the games Dallas won, a lot of it was just sort of these weird clusters of goals they were getting in really short amounts of time, almost where Colorado lost its focus. And it's not like Dallas was dominating the play. Colorado was still controlling the play, of course, especially Nathan MacKinnon. So I still think territorially and talent-wise, Colorado is a better team. The only thing they needed to correct things was goaltending, and the other advantages they had in the series would take over. So Pavel Francouz, yes, it hurts that he's been out, but at the same time, you know, I've said this many times in the past week, he is 30 years old, and he had 30 career starts going into these playoffs. So it's, people are talking about him like he's this huge loss, but we don't really know who Pavel Francouz is at the NHL level. It's not like he's this really proven guy. So it's not even a guarantee that you're taking a huge downgrade going from Francouz to Hutchinson. It's different than if you're comparing Grubauer, right? So I'm not saying that Hutchinson could keep his magic going forever, but maybe we're seeing something like Michael Layton on the Philadelphia Flyers in 2010, and goaltending is a position where, you know, there are only 30 guys in the world that get to start, at any, or 31 guys on any given slate of schedule. And it's sort of a testament to how good you have to be one of those 31 guys. So if you're one of the top 75 goalies in the world, you're still really, really good. Goaltending is a unique position that way, where I think that's why you often see guys come in as replacements and suddenly find their way to stardom and also fade away just as quickly as they became stars. It's very common. So I wouldn't be that surprised if Hutchinson has found some magic and it lasts another couple of weeks and he helps Colorado advance to the next round.
Now, regardless of what happens with Colorado this in these bubble playoffs, Matt, you know, Grubauer's got another year left at 3.3. Francouz is locked up for another 2 years, and then Hutchinson's a UFA. Does Colorado need to get a legit number one goaltender? If you know, they might go to the finals this year. We don't know that yet, but to be competitive, not to be competitive, but I guess to be a legit Stanley Cup contender, do they need to upgrade that position, or is Francouz and Grubauer a good duo in your eyes?
It's a good question, and I think we'll know in the next year or two. I do think Colorado, you know, if I had to make a Stanley Cup pick for next year right now, I'm probably picking Colorado because they have this embarrassment of riches. They're already a really good team. They have the best farm system in the NHL, according to our own Hockey News scouting rankings. They have the best prospect in the NHL among drafted players in Bowen Byram. So they're going to get better. They have so many assets they can also trade. They have so much cap space as well to add more pieces. So this team's going to keep getting better. I do think they're going to be in a position where, you know, let's say a year from now, Colorado is going to win the President's Trophy and the trade deadline's approaching and they haven't gotten good enough goaltending. Maybe you see a trade and they have to bring in the star. Kind of like, you know, Colorado in the mid-90s brought in Patrick Waugh, and the Dallas Stars in the mid to late 90s brought in Eddie Belfour. There are a lot of contending teams over those eras that needed the goalie to put them over the top. So it wouldn't be that surprising. I don't think it's something you have to do yet.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And we'll see what happens in Game 7 if they're able to move on forward and face either the Canucks or Golden Knights. And we'll get to the series, Matt. Flyers and Canucks both on the ropes tonight. Do you see quickly here any of these teams forcing a Game 7?
I'm going to say no.
okay.
Canucks, yeah, I mean, maybe the Flyers, but the Canucks, you know, it was a great performance by Thatcher Demko in the previous game, but it was holding on for dear life. Like, the Canucks were dominated in that game, and they have been for most of the series. I don't think there's a team that looks better overall than Vegas right now. And I just don't think you can't get dominated in the possession game that thoroughly and expect to keep winning games and stay alive. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. So I think Vegas is going to close it out. Philly and the Islanders, it's tough because of both teams. It's possible we're going to see neither number one center. It's still up in the air as of the time that we're recording this. It's, you know, is Sean Couturier going to play? Is Matt Barzal going to play?
Yeah.
And if one guy plays and the other doesn't, that's going to be a big advantage for the other team. But overall, I still think the Flyers, you know, they did show something, especially I like the way they started the previous game, you know, finally getting some pucks on net. But the Islanders are still, they're just so disciplined. They're so hard. They're just so hard to penetrate. And I just don't think anyone's going to out-coach Barry Trotz in the playoffs right now. So I still believe the Islanders are going to pull it out. Even though I had the Flyers winning the series originally, just seeing the series unfold so far, I don't know if Philly can win two more games in a row.
Last segment coming up as we dive into the Edmonton Oilers with Matt Larkin from the Hockey News. Hernan Salas with you here on Locked On Oilers as we're chatting with Matt Larkin, senior writer at the Hockey News. You can connect with him on Twitter at THN Matt Larkin, and you can also hit me up at Hernan the Man. And remember to download and subscribe on your favorite app for the latest episodes. Matt, let's talk some Oilers here. I mean, disappointing, obviously, in the qualifying round. A lot of talk today. I worked on the morning show at TSN 1260 on the Nielsen Show, and there's a lot of talk about Matt Murray. What do you think the Oilers have to give up to get a guy like Matt Murray? Now, again, they're up against the cap. It's a flat cap. We don't know if this could work. Obviously, money would have to go the other way as well. But I don't want to put you on the spot, but if Matt Murray was a potential target for the Edmonton Oilers, what do you see going the other way?
That's a good question. I think, you know, if you look at the Penguins' blue line, they're going to be losing Justin Schultz. Mm-hmm. I think maybe they could use another pseudo-reliable defenseman. I think the Oilers have a good group of sort of similarly, I want to say, priced in terms of trade value. A lot of guys that have only a year or two left on their deal, which is, so it's not really unattractive in terms of the term you're taking on, who can be sort of a middle pair guy, I think, in an ideal situation. So I'm talking, you know, Adam Larson or Chris Russell, guys like that. I think maybe one of them could be a fit. I don't know if it's a one-for-one. Maybe if it's Adam Larson, maybe Adam Larson for Matt Murray, as long as Oilers fans don't go crazy and try and, you know, add in the Taylor Hall factor.
You know they will. You know they will.
Of course they will, right? The trade is one-for-one. But I could see something like that working. Again, it's up to Pittsburgh especially. They're the team in the tougher situation cap-wise. So if you have unsigned Murray and then you have money coming in from Adam Larson, that's going to be a little bit difficult for the Penguins to sort of figure out. But I think, you know, it's still early enough that there's time to move things around. Jim Rutherford's a smart guy, and I think he can make it work. And I do think some help on D would help Pittsburgh in that regard. For the Oilers, I think it's funny. We've been talking about Matt Murray and the Leafs. I like the fit for Matt Murray in Edmonton a lot more because, you know, when your other option is to re-sign Mike Smith, who's pushing 40 and kind of imploded in the playoffs, well, bringing in someone with upside like Matt Murray, I think, is very interesting. And you've seen goaltenders in the past, especially back to Dave Tippett's Arizona days, do very well in his system. So that could be a place where Murray could have a resurgence. I kind of like the fit. And, you know, Mikko Koskinen, I think, was average to maybe above average for a lot of the season. I think he was decent. But again, he didn't get it done in the playoffs. And I think you have to improve that tandem. I think, you know, it definitely held the Oilers back. It was the number one reason they lost the series to Chicago. So you have to improve it. And I just like the idea of bringing in someone with some upside left to tap into in Murray. I think it would be a smart pickup.
And the contract for Matt Murray, you know, he's a RFA. He's coming off just making over $3 million. I can't see an enormous raise here. Like, what are you looking at for dollar-wise for Matt Murray, regardless of which team he goes to?
Well, it's tough, right? A year ago, you might have said, okay, well, his next contract's going to be a long-term deal. It's going to be a seven-year deal. He's been making, you know, whatever, $6 million a year, $7 million. But his value has come down just in time for his next contract. So is it going to be another kind of short-term deal? I wouldn't be surprised. Like, maybe he's, you know, looking to sign a 3-year extension, something to just carry him to free agency a bit earlier and he can hope that by then he's upped his value a lot. So I'm not envisioning this long-term deal. And even for the team perspective, often, you know, you want to get the player if you can get him decent value with term, but I don't know if you want to with Matt Murray. I think you do want him to prove it because of what you've seen in the past year. And he's someone that's had problems with injury in the past. He has a hard time keeping weight on his body. He's very, very slender. So maybe you do want a 2 or 3 year deal might be beneficial for both sides. And you kind of both feel each other out. And if he really blossoms again and becomes that star number one, then you eventually work at a long-term deal.
Chatting with Matt Larkin from the Hockey News here on the Locked On Oilers podcast. Matt, continuing on with the Edmonton Oilers, I mean, this team still has a lot of holes to fill defensively. I mean, a lot of talk here when they were eliminated by the Blackhawks was the top three for the Oilers defense in Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, Darnell Nurse, because their goals against hasn't really improved, and these guys struggled mightily in the four games against the Blackhawks. Defensively for the Edmonton Oilers, you know, Adam Larson is the name that's thrown out there the most, but any chance you see a guy like Oscar Klefbom get moved? Because I think there would be, you know, a market for him. He's cheap and he can be a reliable second-line defenseman, but here in Edmonton, you know, he takes a little bit of heat for his, you know, defensive awareness at times and his passing and all that, but what do you make of Oscar Klefbom, and can you see anywhere where he would, the Oilers would move him?
Yeah, I do think that he's someone who might benefit from a change of scenery. And, you know, he's a good defenseman. He was a good prospect. He's shown a lot of potential, and he's had flashes where it looked like he was going to become that top-pairing guy. But I wonder if he's someone who would be better off playing on a contending team, a veteran team where he can kind of blend in more, as mm-hmm. like you said, a number two-pairing guy, and maybe with a coach that can kind of unlock him and get him to play with more confidence, find his potential. Edmonton can be, you know, just like every Canadian market, can be a pressure cooker of a city. And I think a lot of the Oilers' top blue liners, they're all guys who at the start of their career. Same with Nurse and Larson, both first-round picks. They all were projected to be like legitimate top-pair guys, and I think each one of them is probably better suited for a middle pair, but you have all of them being forced into the top-pair role. And it's kind of like it's something you want to be careful with when it comes to Evan Bouchard as well. He's someone, again, he's got the ceiling projected to be, you know, an absolute horse of a top-pair guy, but you can't force him into that role right away. You need some support. So in a perfect world, if Ken Holland can find a way to acquire a legitimate number one defenseman, I think it would help a lot and take pressure off the current core of the Oilers defenseman.
Last one here for you. Is there any way the Oilers don't bring back Andreas Athanasiou? I mean, they gave up 2 second-rounders for him. In 13 games here, he didn't show much, but I think it's such a small sample size that we saw here from Athanasiou that I don't think it's just like, oh, after 13 games, let's just get rid of him. Like, they did give up quite a bit to get him. Do you see anywhere where the Oilers don't bring him back?
I do. If I have to make a prediction right now, I'm going to say they don't qualify him. It's tough because, like you said, they paid a heavy price. And, you know, Athanasiou comes from Detroit originally, and Ken Holland, like, there's an attachment there, right, from both of them in their Detroit days. And Holland was the GM when they first drafted him. But if you really zoom out and think about what the Oilers really need, you know, they're a team that's trying to get to the next step and become a true Stanley Cup contender. They don't need Andreas Athanasiou. They need bigger, better players. Not bigger as in size, I mean bigger stars. And do you want to spend $3 million on your cap when you don't have that much cap space? Or do you want to free up money to pursue, like you said, Matt Murray? Or bring in a better defenseman, bring in a goal scorer on the right wing to help Connor McDavid? Or someone who could play both wings? Like I've been saying, Mike Hoffman would be a really nice fit, I think, to play on McDavid's wing, whether it was the left or right side. And I think you want to keep that money available, and you don't want to burn $3 million on a player in Athanasiou, has a lot of talent, a lot of speed, but it's been very inconsistent throughout his career. I personally don't think $3 million is a good spend.
Matt, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to join me on the Locked On Oilers podcast. Hope to have you on again down the road, maybe around the draft. And like always, I look forward to your writing on the Hockey News. Well, where can we find all your latest stuff here, Matt?
Oh, it's thehockeynews.com. We are partnered with Sports Illustrated. So you're going to see an SI.com kind of URL, but it's still Hockey News. It's all our stuff. And that's where you can find me every day.
Awesome. Thanks again, Matt.
Hey, thanks for that.
Man, that was fun. A big shout out to Matt Larkin, senior writer at the Hockey News. You can find him on Twitter at THNMattLarkin and at HockeyNews.com. Well, that's going to wrap up the Thursday edition of Locked On Oilers. As for tomorrow, let's wait. There's tons of rumors out there, tons of news happening, so we'll wait and see tomorrow. If not, we'll go with maybe the top 10 trades the Edmonton Oilers have made, or we can also count down the last 20 14th overall picks in the NHL draft as the Oilers hold that pick as well. Remember, you can hit me up on Twitter at HernandeMan, at Locked On Oilers, and remember to follow Locked On Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe and download the latest episodes. This wraps up this edition of Locked On Oilers. I'm HernandeMan talking Los Petroleros. Have a great day. We'll chat with you on Friday.